Welcome back on WGN. Mike Farron talking with a truly great actor, and it's a great honor and privilege to speak to Brian Dennehy today. Brian, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. You have a new movie that's opening up called Everyone's Hero, where you get to play the voice of Babe Ruth, which has got to be a thrill for you.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. Being a Yankee fan, I know that that makes too many people listening happy, but... you know, the Babe, of course. We do the G-rated Babe, not the X-rated Babe, or
right.
The triple X-rated Babe. But it's a sweet, genuine family picture. So many of these so-called animated family pictures are really not for 7 or 8 year old kids. This one is. This one is where Grandma and Grandpa can take the kids. To this and have a wonderful time and not worry about trying to explain something to a 4-year-old that they're not ready to understand. So it's a very sweet, funny movie with wonderful people involved. Whoopi Goldberg and Bill Macy and Rob Reiner and Mandy Patinkin. So it's a nice project. I hope it does well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it for people who don't know about it. Tell us a little bit about Everyone's Hero and the story.
Well, it mixes two of the great American themes: mythology and baseball. Babe Ruth has one of his bats, his favorite bat, has been stolen or misplaced, and
stolen by somebody from the Chicago Cubs, nonetheless.
Yeah,
right?
Of course, and. It has to be tracked down. This kid finds it, and the story is really him getting it back to Babe in time for the big game, and then what happens at the end of the big game. It's, of course, mythology, but very sweet, a very uplifting story for a kid who wants to believe that the world is capable of all kinds of magic, and hopefully there are some kids out there who still believe that. And of course, it's very well done. So I'm pleased with it, and I hope people go see it because it's the kind of thing you want to take your kids to, your young kids.
Well, there's another interesting story in it. This was Christopher Reeve and Dana Reeves' last project
right.
as well, wasn't it? And Dana Reeves was the producer on it. Can you talk a little bit about how instrumental they were in getting this story told?
Yeah, I don't know really that story. That all happened before I came on board. Typically, what happens with an animated picture is the voice talent is the last element in the project, and they make their calls and you say, yeah, I'd like to do it and like to sign on, especially when I heard they were involved and other people were involved. But by that time I think Chris was having a tough time, and I was in London anyway doing a Death of a Salesman, so that I did whatever I did by phone. And, you know, typically with animation, you're in a room by yourself
right.
listening to somebody on the telephone and doing the work all alone. That's normally the way it happens. I still haven't met any of the other, except for the kid,
right.
Jake, who I met at a promotion thing last week. But, for example, I've been working on Pixar's next project, and Bette Midler plays my wife, and I've never met her. And I've been working on it for 3 or 4 years. So that's typically the way it works with animation. People are do it by themselves. It's one of the great things about working an animated film. You don't have to look your best. You just show up.
Was that weird when you go into the theater or you see the final screening of it and there's your voice on the screen with this animated picture? I mean, it's got to be a little bit strange, right?
Yeah, it's weird. My kids have seen a couple of commercials for it, and they said that there's one brief phrase that's of my voice that's in the end. But weirder is when you're in a foreign capital like Paris or Rome, and you see one of your movies and they have the thing dubbed with an actor who invariably with my characters is always speaking. It sounds like all of a sudden my nice light tenor has been changed into this huge bass. But yeah, it's weird about voices and voicing. Animation requires much bigger stuff. I mean, the best animated voice it ever was Mel Blanc, the wonderful
amazing.
Mel Blanc for Warner Brothers. And he did these hugely excessive voices that were absolutely brilliant. And it can't be too much with a voice. The more you do, the better it is. And even now, as I listened to Babe, I thought I was eating the scenery in the room. I realized I could have done more with it. So.
Did you do any research, kind of watching Babe Ruth, watching interviews
and stuff like that
to back it up? Because he's a Yankee fan.
I remember his voice from the famous farewell at Yankee Stadium. And also, you know, there are movies. He made movies.
Right.
He made movies in the 20s when he was younger. And he had exactly the right voice for himself. He
right.
had a big, loud, kind of wise guy sound. And he had a rough street quality to it. And, you know, he's a Baltimore boy. And a guy who drank too much and smoked way too much. And all of that was in his voice. As I say, we don't deal with any of that. All he's guilty of in our movie is having too many banana splits.
Well.
and I suspect he probably didn't have too many banana splits in his life. But it's an interesting thing doing voices, and some people are really brilliant at it. One of the guys, for example, that does a huge amount of it for Pixar is John Ratzenberger.
Yeah, Cliff Clavin from TV's Cheers.
Cliff Clavin from Cheers, and he's got a wonderful voice, which he doesn't change very much.
Mm-hmm.
But he always had that kind of, all-knowing, pompous, kind of pretentious quality. And it with the characters he reads for Pixar, it's just great. I love listening to him. I love listening to a guy who's good with his voice. Yeah. Mandy Patinkin is great. Mandy does a lot of commercials, and he's, of course, a singer.
Yep.
So he's got a very distinctive sound. But
and he's also an Everyone's Hero, too, right?
He's in it, too, yeah.
So, see, it's a who's who. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your Yankee fandom. When you were growing up, because you grew up in Connecticut, right?
No, I grew up in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I was a Brooklyn Dodger fan.
Oh,
wow. The Brooklyn Dodgers broke my heart. And when they broke my heart, I never went back to them. So the Los Angeles Dodgers, as far as I'm concerned, are a whole other
entity.
Yeah. And I have no interest in them.
So who was your guy when you were growing up, a Yankee fan, or actually as a Dodger fan first,
the guy that I worshipped at 10, when you really worship things, mm-hmm. was Jackie Robinson. And going to Ebbets Field. To see the Dodgers play St. Louis, for example, or Cincinnati, or one of the teams that had a lot of Southern players,
right.
And of course I was too young to really understand what was going on, but it was interesting how Robinson had been convinced by Branch Rickey that he had to not fight back, except he did, but he did it in baseball. He drove him crazy with stealing bases. He drove him crazy with his hits. He drove him crazy on the base paths. And yet he never, said anything in response to their racist remarks. Now, all of this, of course, was way over my head as a kid. All I did was just love to watch him play. And I was a huge Dodger fan anyway. I mean, I could name the whole team to you. I used to sit out in way out in right field and right behind Andy Pafko or Carl
sure.
Furlow or wherever, and it was a very intimate stadium.
What was Ebbets like? Because, you know, that gets lost. I mean, we're lucky that we have Wrigley here.
I think
there
were 34,000 seats. It was a small stadium. Mm-hmm. We were very close to the players, which was great for us and terrible for them. except that, you know, when they played the Giants, it was really tough on the Giants. I mean, as much as we hated the Yankees, we really hated the Giants. You only played the Yankees once a year in the World Series if
right.
you were lucky. Giants, we played all the time. I remember when I first realized that the world was not the Manichaean place that I thought it was when Sal Magley, who was the devil, who was Satan,
right.
a pitcher for the Giants, was traded to the Brooklyn Dodgers. And I can still remember saying, but he can't play for the Brooklyn Dodgers. He's Sal Magley. Sal Magley can't play for the Brooklyn Dodgers. What are you talking about? And, boy, has that changed.
Yeah, so, that's a lot different now.
But in those days, of course, before free agency, guys spent their whole careers playing
right.
With teams. And they were there for 10, 12, 15 years.
Now, we're lucky we have one of those guys who played all but 1 year with the Cubs, and Ron Santo, who we have here.
Yeah.
And Ron was one of those guys who, before the advent of all of it, you really, and he still, you know, he played 1 year with the White Sox after he was traded was it 74? And he still bleeds Cub blue. You can't even talk to him about the White Sox.
Well, Chicago is, you know, one of those cities.
Yeah.
Where guys, I don't even know how true it is anymore, but you had football players, basketball players, baseball players, they wanted to stay in Chicago.
Yeah.
And why not? You know, what a, especially if you're winning, what a great place to be. You can either be winning or be with the Chicago Cubs.
Right. That's true.
I remember those baseball. I remember when the Blackhawks were, contenders, yeah. And that place was a madhouse.
Even into the mid '90s, the old stadium was just nuts for Blackhawks.
Yeah.
And now it's a lot different. I mean, there's nobody pays
but
any
really
mind.
Good natured. I mean,
yeah.
it can get mean at Fenway,
mm-hmm.
and it can get mean in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
But it never did in Chicago. It was always let's have a good time. Let's have some fun. Let's pick on the guys. Let's yell at them. But I rarely saw a fight break out anyplace.
Yeah.
And it's one of the great things about Chicago. I think people are just so damn happy to be living there that they don't need to have a fight with anybody.
Well, I always say if we had weather like San Diego, everybody would want to live here. So.
Yeah, that's true. Well, as it is, a lot of people do want to live there now.
That's
anyway.
True.
I
mean, that's true. And you said it's your
completely
favorite.
Crazy.
You said it's your favorite city.
Yeah, it's a great city. It's my favorite city. A friend of mine is running the Goodman Theater, Bob Falk,
sure.
his production of Lear, which I hear is...
With Stacy Keach as Lear, yeah.
Is opening this weekend, and I'll be out there for that. And, I've had a lot of experience in Chicago. I spent a lot of time in Chicago, and I just, it's the best American city. There's nobody else comes close, including all the ones that I've lived in. But Chicago is the best city in America.
Well, we're talking with Brian Dennehy. Before I let you go...
I don't think they're particularly well served by their sports owners, with the exception of the White Sox.
Yes. Well, you know, the White Sox have had a bit of a renaissance. I mean, that's. I mean, you asked me before we started the interview if I thought the White Sox were going to make the playoffs. How closely do you follow baseball and football
well,
now?
Well, I follow them in the sense that, you know, they have any impact on the Yankees. Now, the Chicago Bears, we'll have to see how real that is. Certainly, the defense is real.
Yeah.
But that's always the case with the Chicago Bears.
Well, you're a football guy, too. Did you have a football scholarship at Columbia?
Yeah, I played at Columbia. Well, they didn't call it that, but that's what it was. Because in those days, you know, they were genuine scholar athletes.
Right. Well, especially at Columbia, there aren't a whole lot of non-scholar athletes.
Well, Harvard had the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, that was our problem. We were competing with the same relatively small...
Right.
The small number of athletes that could get into Harvard, mm-hmm. Princeton, Yale, and Columbia obviously went to the other places and not to Columbia, which I think was a mistake for them, because to go to school in New York City in the 50s, as I did, turns out to have been one of the best things that ever happened to me. But
so are you still follow football too now?
Oh yeah, sure. I'm going to be at the homecoming game. I mean, you know, you
sure.
don't follow football,
right? But we do like the NFL too, though. Do you follow?
Oh,
the
I do. Yeah, sure. I don't particularly root for a team anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be. I was actually kind of a Bill Parcells junkie. Wherever he would go, and he made a lot of stops.
Right.
I would kind of follow him to see what he was doing next. But I think he's got a problem down in Dallas this year. He doesn't seem to be able to beat this one. But I like watching football games. I like to see what happens. I mean, if he holds together. This guy Reggie Bush is going to be unbelievable.
Yeah,
and you could see that last year. And you know, he was a man playing with boys.
Right.
And I got a feeling that's going to be the same thing in the NFL. As I say, if he can somehow, running backs always catch hell and physically. And if he can have a long career, he's going to bust everybody's record wide open. But you know, he's playing at New Orleans. They got to
right.
put a team together, so we'll have to see. But I do like football. I like watching. This kid, Jay Cutler.
Yeah, the kid in Denver.
He's going to be very interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's scary now, because you see these kids coming out of high school,
right.
looking for that big signing bonus, and they're obviously using juice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the dark side of all of
right.
this, which is
right.
which is scary for these young kids.
And it makes it easier to root for a guy like Cutler, who was, you know, went to Vanderbilt, who's an educated guy, who's a great story, came from Santa Claus, Indiana, you know, wasn't recruited, stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I can still remember the. In fact, the ESPN guys are still saying, well, we don't know if he's for real, you know. I don't know what has to happen. But, I mean, you know, they said the same thing about Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
And then you got Charlie Batch. I mean, that team is.
Well, they're pretty good.
They're pretty scary.
Well, you should come in and host our show some night.
Well, I mean, I like sports. I like football in particular. Yeah. Has always been a sport that I love. Basketball, I don't know enough about. I wish I did know more about it. And baseball, to me, I mean, the thing that's great about baseball, I said this to Joe Torre the other day, is that I can remember how excited I used to get when I was a kid about baseball and see being at the games and just. And the slow parts of the game, I would just kind of look around and not get involved in. But now, as an old man, it's the little tiny things that are done in baseball that really interest me. It's I mentioned to him a few weeks ago when they played Detroit, and they had put the clock on the pitcher, whoever he was, and they stole three bases against Rodriguez.
Right,
and nobody does that.
Nobody runs on him at all.
Nobody runs on him. But they knew that they could beat this guy. Mm-hmm. And there was this wonderful shot. One great thing about television. There was this wonderful shot from center field camera of a close-up, a relative close-up of Rodriguez looking towards the Yankee dugout saying, what are you guys doing to me?
I
mean, baseball is full of those little things. It's like what the Red Sox did this year with Damon. I mean, you can get rid of Deion Branch, and, you know, there's five or six other guys you can throw the ball to, but there's only one guy who can play center field.
Yeah.
And when you trade him to the Yankees because he's going to cost you another $8 or $9 million, I mean, that's just shooting yourself. Forget about it in the foot.
It's well, and the Red Sox fans haven't forgotten about it either. I was at Fenway in July, and the best T-shirt I saw outside it was one that said, looks like Jesus, throws like Mary, acts like Judas.
Mm. Well, but that's one of the problems with Red Sox. I mean, the fans... I love the baseball players, but the fans can be real creeps.
Yeah, they can.
Johnny Damon, they should, every time he walks into that stadium, they should give him a standing ovation for what he did for them.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't pay him for it.
Yeah.
And he moved on. He did the right thing.
Well, and the Yankees
but
are going for it.
If I were a Boston Red Sox fan, I would never lose my respect or affection for Johnny Damon, because he did as much as he did for the Yankees this year, he did it for the Red Sox for year after year after year.
Yeah. Well, Brian Dennehy, thank you so much for joining us. I got to ask you real quick before I let you go. The idiots that I work with are 40-year-old idiots, and their favorite movie is Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
With one of yours. How much fun was it working with Chris Farley on that? And how many times do you get stopped about that movie?
Oh, yeah. Well, people of a certain generation, that's the movie that they remember. And, you know, he was a sweet, sweet man from your area.
Yeah, he went to Marquette.
In fact, he died there in the Hancock Building.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sad situation. I remember 6 months or so before he died, I saw him on some interview show. He looked awful.
Mm-hmm.
And I called David Spade, and I said, God, David, you know, and he said, I can't talk about it. He said, he won't listen to anybody. He self-destructed, and a lot of those guys did. I mean, Belushi and Sam Kinison and John Candy. I mean, there was this terrible thing that we do to our comedians, which is we expect them to always be on.
Yeah.
That we expect them always to be crazy. In fact, the opening sequence of that picture is him at a fraternity party when he throws himself in the air and breaks the table.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we all wanted him to do, and he did it. He could never resist going into a party and you know, turning it upside down. But you know, you get to be 34, 35 years old, you just don't want to do that anymore.
Right.
And of course, the other dark side is the abuse, the self abuse, the drugs and the booze and everything. It's funny, if you can get past that age, if you can get to 40. It seems that you can survive. You know, it's a critical 4 or 5 years there that some of them don't make it through. But I liked him very much. And he had a wonderful family. It's not like Belushi, you know.
Right.
Belushi had this abusive father. Chris had a great family. And it was just one of those things, you know, where he He consumed too much of everything.
Yeah. And over too soon.
And you can't do that.
Yeah. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time. Everyone's Hero in theaters now. Thank you. You've been so generous with your time, and really appreciate it. And enjoy Chicago.
My favorite town. You're all very lucky to be living there.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Take care, Brian. Bye-bye.